Welcome and thank you for standing by for today's conference. All participants will be in listen-only mode until the question-and-answer session. At that time, to ask a question, please press star 1. Today's conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. I would now like to turn the conference over to John Bateman. Sir, you may begin.
Thank you. Good morning, and thanks for joining this monthly climate update call, part of the suite of climate services that NOAA provides to government, business, academia, and the public to support informed decision-making. I'm John Bateman with NOAA Communications, and I'll be facilitating the call today. If you have any additional questions after the conclusion of today's call, my colleague John Leslie and I can both be reached by email, and I'll spell it. It's NESDIS.PA@NOAA.gov. Today's update will feature three short presentations followed by an operator-assisted question and answer session. A copy of the presentation our speakers will follow can be downloaded from the link in the media advisory. If you don't have the link, I'll spell it for you now. It is https://www.ncdc.noaa.gov/SOTC/BRIEFINGS. With that, I will introduce our speakers. The first presenter is Ira Sanchez-Lugo, a climatologist with NOAA's National Centers for Environmental Information, who will provide a summary of the June U.S. and Global Climate Report, as well as the latest drought monitor update. Our second presenter is Randy Cervini, a geographical sciences professor from Arizona State University, who also serves as rapporteur on extreme records for the United Nations World Meteorological Organization. He will review the extreme warmth seen in parts of the Northern Hemisphere in 2020, as well as discuss how the WMO determines global and regional weather records. And our third presenter is Anthony Artusa, a meteorologist at NOAA's Climate Prediction Center, who will provide the latest El Nino and La Nina updates, as well as the temperature, precipitation, and drought outlook for the months of August, September, and October. Our first speaker will be Ira from NOAA.
Thank you, John, and thanks to everyone who joined in today. I'm going to go ahead and start on slide 2. So as you can see from the anomalies and percentiles maps that are on the slide, a large portion of the Earth's land and ocean surfaces had above average June temperatures during June 2020. The most notable temperature anomalies were observed across the central U.S., northern and eastern Europe, northern Russia, as well as the North Pacific Ocean. There were several regions that did experience cooler than average conditions during the month, and these included western and southeastern Russia, India, and across parts of western North America. There were nearly 7% of the world's surface, mostly across the tropics, that had a record warm June temperature. However, no land or ocean area had a record cold June temperature. Averaged as a whole, the global land and ocean surface temperature for June 2020 tied with 2015 as the third highest June temperature on record at 0.92 degrees Celsius, or 1.66 degrees Fahrenheit above the 20th century average. Only June of 2016 and 2019 were warmer. Regionally, South America, Europe, and Africa had their third warmest June on record, according to our analysis. And the Caribbean region, region's June 2020 temperature tied with 2016 as the fourth highest June on record. Excuse me. I wanted to highlight as well that a potential new maximum temperature north of the Arctic Circle was set on June 20th when temperatures rose to 38 degrees Celsius or 100.4 degrees Fahrenheit in the Russian town of Berkyansk. I believe that's how it's pronounced. If this value is approved by the World Meteorological Organization, it would be the highest temperature ever recorded north of the Arctic Circle. And Dr. Cervini will discuss this later. Moving now to slide number 3, The global land and ocean surface temperature for the first 6 months of the year was the second highest since global records began in 1880 at 1.07 degrees Celsius or 1.90 degrees Fahrenheit above the 20th century average. This was only 0.05 degrees Celsius or 0.09 degrees Fahrenheit shy of tying the record warm January through June of 2016. The first half of the year had warmer than average temperatures across much of the globe, as we can see in the map, with record warm temperatures across a large portion of Asia, Southern North America, Central America, South America, Europe, Asia, and across parts of the Atlantic Ocean, as well as parts of the Pacific and Southern Indian Ocean. However, no land or ocean areas had record cold January through June temperatures. Calculating the continental averages, South America, Europe, and Asia had their warmest January through June period on record. According again to our analysis, our statistical analysis, the year 2020 is almost certain to rank among the five warmest years on record, with a 35.8% chance of it being the warmest year on record and about a 40% chance of it being second warmest on record. Moving now to slide number four, averaged as a whole, the U.S. was warmer and drier than average during the month. We had a high-pressure system over the Great Plains that brought above-average temperatures to the central U.S., while a trough along the east and west coast kept the west and southeast with temperatures that were near to cooler than average. A total of nine states had a top 10 warm June, with Rhode Island, Delaware, Minnesota, and Kansas having their eighth warmest June since national records began in 1895. South Carolina was the only state to have a statewide temperature that ranked below average for June. In terms of precipitation, above average conditions were observed across parts of the Pacific Northwest, Northern and Central Rockies, the Great Lakes, the Deep South, and the Mid-Atlantic regions. In terms of the statewide averages, Idaho had its 13th wettest June, with another 10 states having wetter than average conditions during the month. Below average precipitation was observed across portions of the Southwest, the Great Plains, Ohio Valley, and much of the Northeast. Maine had its 13th driest June, while 16 additional states had a drier than average June. I wanted to highlight the billion-dollar disasters in the next slide. During the first half of the year, there were 10 weather and climate disaster events identified with losses surpassing $1 billion across the U.S., and all of these 10 events were due to severe storms. The $10 billion events that occurred this year tied with 2011 and 2016 as the second highest number of events during the first half of the year. This is trailing 2017 by only one event. Now moving to slide number six to discuss drought conditions. As of today, 27.5% of the contiguous U.S. was in drought. This is about a 4 percentage points points more than 4 weeks ago, about the same time in June. Again, the month of June was warm and dry across the U.S., which contributed to some drought deterioration across parts of the High Plains, the Midwest, the Northeast, South, and West. There were some localized areas that did experience some, that received some beneficial rains. So some of these areas did also see some improvements. However, there was a larger portion that did experience drought deterioration during the last 4 weeks. I wanted to highlight that Tropical Storm Fay, which formed off the Carolina coast and moved northward, made landfall in New Jersey on July 10, and much of the rainfall from Bay was welcome and beneficial for parts of the Northeast, with some locations receiving between 2 to 3 inches, and some very local areas receiving up to 7 inches. So this did bring some relief, drought relief. However, there were some lighter totals across most of New England, and that did not really do much to help with drought conditions in the area. Outside of the contiguous U.S., Hawaii did see some rain during the last 4 weeks, but was not enough to help with drought conditions. So we did see some drought deterioration across Hawaii. In terms of Puerto Rico, we did see that there were some rain that fell across, particularly across non-drought areas across the Northwest. And so drought did not was not improved in Puerto Rico a whole lot. So that is all that I have for today. I will now turn it over to Dr. Randy Cervani.
Thank you very much. Basically, I'm here to talk a little bit about the World Meteorological Organization's Archive of Weather and Climate Extremes. As was said earlier, I am something that is called a rapporteur. A rapporteur is United Nations parlance for an expert. And I'm in charge of this particular project and have been for the last 14 years. If we go to slide 8, what you can see here is that the Archive of Weather and Climate Extremes is a way to address officially how hot, how cold, how windy, how severe weather has been for the planet as a whole. While individual countries such as the United States have their own particular methods and committees set up to address climate extremes for their particular country, up until 2006 and 7, there really wasn't any way to do that officially for the globe or for the hemisphere or for particular continents. So we got a project together at the World Meteorological Organization to do this. Now, why would we want to have an official list of extremes? Well, one of the things is obviously to aid climate change research. It's hard to say if climate is changing unless you have specific baseline values of how climate currently exists so that you can see how it's changing. It also, having extremes gives aid to engineering firms. So if you're building a building, you need to know what are the maximum winds that could, that area might specifically have, or for health concerns. It obviously helps the global media in terms of being able to more accurately report on this being the hottest or the coldest or the windiest or whatever it might be. And I found particularly and pleasing to me that it also helps garner interest in climate and climate research. And so I get a number of kids that email me every day about becoming climatologists because they get interested in weather extremes. If we go to slide number 9, well, you can see a little bit of what our website actually looks like. We have the data of global extremes for temperature, pressure, rainfall, hail, aridity, wind, tornadoes, tropical cyclones such as hurricanes, lightning, weather-related mortalities, and even wave heights. And we display that information in a variety of different ways. We can display it both in a tabular type of format, and because I work at a university that has a really good geographic information science program, some of my students have actually taken that information and translated it into nice GIS-style maps, and so you can get either that kind of a format or the tabular format. But the big thing that we do now is when new records occur, we have to evaluate those particular records. So if we go to slide number 10, the way that new records are evaluated as we go to look at an individual new possible purported extreme is that I set up an ad hoc evaluation committee. Now, these committees are constructed of some members of the World Meteorological Organization, somebody who is associated with the particular National Weather Service of the country that is experiencing that particular extreme, and then a variety of blue ribbon international scientists from around the world. Now, what we do is we meet via email discussions, and we look at a purported extreme, and we're going to look at it in a number of different ways. We're going to look at the observation procedures that were used. We're going to look at the kind of equipment that was used to measure that, whether that equipment was properly calibrated. We're going to look to see if the sensors that made that observation were properly sited. Then we're also going to compare that particular observation with surrounding areas to see that it's consistent with the trends that are associated with the surrounding area. And we're going to look at that observation both in terms of its previous and its post-event variations to see how well that does. Now, obviously, that takes a little bit of time. So most of these committees are in place for around 6 to 9 months. I know that can be a bit of a problem for the media because they like immediate responses. Like, yes, was yesterday's temperature the hottest that we've ever seen? To do it right, to make sure that all the T's are crossed and the I's are dotted, we have to carefully look at the raw data, carefully look at all the metadata that is associated with that. So, unfortunately, that does take time. But with that said, for the last 14 years, we've come up with some pretty cool investigations. If you go to slide number 11, what you can see is, just as you might be aware of, a couple weeks ago, we came up with an announcement of two new world records. The longest single lightning flash distance, which turns out to be 440 miles across southern Brazil. It's basically the distance from Boston to Washington, D.C. And the greatest duration for a single lightning flash, which now is 16.7 seconds for one single lightning flash that occurred in Argentina. Both of those records were set using a new satellite-based lightning technology. And as mentioned earlier, we are now in the process of putting together an evaluation team, and I am in contact with people in the Russian Hydrometeorological Agency that monitors the weather for Russia, and we are getting the raw data and the metadata for this location in northern Siberia, which experienced a temperature of 38 degrees Celsius over 100 degrees Fahrenheit. We're going to be getting the information on the actual calibration, the type of sensor that was used, and we'll be able to verify that particular observation. So we're in the process of doing that right now. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to Anthony Artusa, who's going to talk a little bit about El Nino.
Okay. Thank you very much, Randy. A wonderful presentation. Good morning, everyone. I'd like to continue on with looking at the sea surface temperatures and the El Nino Southern Oscillation on slide 12. Currently, we have below normal sea surface temperatures in the eastern Pacific, above normal temperatures in the western Pacific, and then throughout most of the central and east central Pacific, we have near normal sea surface temperatures. Currently, we have ENSO neutral conditions. So the current phase of ENSO is neutral, and we have warmer than normal sea surface temperatures in the Gulf of Mexico and the Caribbean. Now, in terms of the ENSO forecast, or the El Nino Southern Oscillation forecast, again, we have the neutral event, which is in place right now. We think this will continue throughout the summer. Then by autumn, we start to see enhanced chances for a La Nina across the U.S., and these chances are about 50 to 55% during the autumn, so it's not a huge, strong signal, but we are playing a weak La Nina for the upcoming months, and those odds are right around 50% for La Nina for the upcoming winter. Okay, so if we advance on to slide 13, before getting into the monthly and seasonal forecasts, I just wanted to mention that these use a consensus of statistical and dynamical models. We also look at long-term temperature and precipitation trends and other factors such as soil moisture considerations, in some cases sea ice coverage. And in this case, we are beginning to play the anticipated effects of a weak La Nina. So on slide 13, we have the monthly outlook. You can see for August. And notice for the temperatures on the left, we have above normal temperatures are favored over most of the lower 48 states. Notice the probabilities are in excess of 50% across southern Florida and also from the southern plains northeastward up toward New England. We also have above normal temperatures favored for western and southern parts of Alaska. In the areas where you see EC, the unshaded areas, that represents equal chances of below, near, and above normal temperatures. And it simply means that we don't have enough information to go with one particular category. For the precipitation on the right, we have areas of above normal precipitation that are forecast for August across southern Alaska and also the northern plains region. We also have a large area of above normal precipitation that is forecast across the southeast and parts of the mid-Atlantic. And then we have an area of below normal that is favored over the southern High Plains region. Okay, if we advance on to the next slide, we'll look at the seasonal. This is slide 14, and the seasonal outlook is for August, September, October. For the temperatures, we have above normal temperatures predicted over in the entire U.S., including Alaska and the lower 48, and also Hawaii for that matter. Notice the highest probabilities are in excess of 60% over much of the Southwest and California. Also, the northeastern part of the CONUS or contiguous U.S., southern Florida, and also western parts of Alaska. The precipitation forecast is similar to what we saw with the monthly. We have the above normal precipitation is favored for southern Alaska and the northern plains. And this is, again, connected to a consensus of different models, as well as some thoughts with La Nina and how we think things are going to trend in that direction. We have below normal precipitation expected over parts of the southwest and the southern plains. This is connected to a consolidation of statistical tools, and it's also suggestive of a delay in the southwest monsoon, which is what we've been seeing for the past few weeks. Finally, the area, a large area of above normal precipitation over the southeast, is also connected to what we call these Cape Verde-type storms, these tropical storms and hurricanes that form off the coast of Africa, tend to track all the way across the Atlantic and recurve up toward the southeastern U.S. So that's just a general signal for wetness across the southeast. And if we go on to slide 15, we can look at the U.S. drought outlook. If you notice from the legend in the lower right, we have drought persisting in areas of brown, which includes a large portion of the western lower 48 states. You'll notice in Texas we have some yellow shading, which indicates that drought is likely to develop. This is because of the increased temperatures and the forecast for above normal temperatures and below normal precipitation. That would lead certainly toward enhanced chances for drought. And then for the other areas that you see in the olive green and tan shading across the northern portion of the lower 48, let's say from the Dakotas across the Great Lakes to New England, those are the areas that we think are most likely to see some improvement or even removal of drought conditions. No drought is indicated currently over Alaska. Drought is expected to persist or even worsen across the Hawaiian Islands, although drought for Puerto Rico is expected to improve. So that's all I had, and I would like to turn it back now to John.
All right. Thank you, Anthony. We will now take specific questions from the call participants. Please be sure to identify who you would like to answer the question if possible. Melinda, could you please remind the call participants how they can ask a question, and then please queue up the first question.
Thank you. And at this time, to ask your question, please press star 1. Please unmute your phone and record your name clearly at the prompt. To withdraw your request, please press star 2. One moment, please, for our first question. First question is from Rebecca Hersher from National Public Radio. Your line is open.
Hi. My question is about sea surface temperatures in the Atlantic beyond, I think you mentioned the Gulf and the Caribbean. Can you say any more about what sea surface temperatures are like right now and what they might look like going into the fall?
Okay. I assume this is for me, for Anthony. Is that correct?
Yes. Thanks.
Okay. Sure. Right now we have the temperatures across the Caribbean and the Gulf of Mexico are warmer than normal. We think that this is likely to continue. And, of course, a big concern with this is that this relatively warm water serves as an available heat source for tropical systems to develop and to become stronger. So that is certainly one of the areas that we will look at, is the Caribbean, and also what is called the MDR, or the Main Development Region. That's the low-latitude Atlantic. And remember how I mentioned that we look for these Cape Verde-type storms, where these easterly waves come off Africa. They track across the low latitudes of the Atlantic, typically at this time of the year, and they can strengthen into tropical storms or hurricanes. Having the nice warm water down there, in fact, it usually has to be above about 80 degrees Fahrenheit, that helps in generating these tropical storms. So that's kind of the latest thinking on where we're going with tropical cyclones and relatively warm water for the next few months.
Thanks.
Okay, you're welcome.
And once again, to ask a question, please press star 1 at this time. One moment, please. Thank you for standing by. We are showing no further questions.
All right. Wonderful. Thank you, Melinda. If there are no further questions, I will wrap up the call. First, I'd like to thank all of our speakers for their time and to everyone else for participating in this conference call. And I will end by reminding you all to mark your calendars for some upcoming releases. The release of the July 2020 U.S. climate statistics is scheduled for August 6th. The release for the July 2020 global climate statistics is scheduled for August 13th. And the media telecon for the July U.S. and Global Climate Report is scheduled for 11 a.m. Eastern Time on Thursday, August 20th. And finally, an audio file of this call will be posted on the NOAA.gov media advisory site later today. If you have any further informational needs, please just email me. I'll spell my email address. It's jones.jones@noaa.gov. My contact information is also available at the top of the media advisory. This concludes today's call. Thank you.
Thank you. Once again, that does conclude today's conference. We do appreciate you attending. You may disconnect at this time.